which also failed. Saul has sent men to David's house to try to kill him, and Michal helped him to escape out the window. Saul sent messengers to Naoth and Ramah to try to kill David. We read of this on Sunday, how he sent messengers on three occasions, and on all three occasions, what did those messengers do? They prophesied before the Lord, right? Finally, Saul went himself, and Saul tried to capture David, kill David, and he began to prophesy himself and praise God. And then, where we left off on Sunday, is that he has even tried to attempt to kill his own son. He tried to strike down Jonathan and threw his spear at Jonathan after Jonathan's response defending David. So what we read of here is already many, many attempts of Saul demonstrating egregious wickedness, him being prideful and rejecting the will of God, not understanding and putting into common sense what Samuel has said to him plainly, that the kingdom would not remain in his hand. But also we see fully that the Lord is with David. As you read these chapters, it is just so apparent that without the Lord being on David's side and David trusting in the Lord, these things would not have happened and his life would not have been spared repeatedly. David was the Lord's anointed, and so God was with him. We also read quite a bit in chapter 20 about the beautiful friendship between Jonathan and David, this deep-rooted love and respect that they had for each other. I was talking to Larry about this friendship after class, and we were discussing how beautiful this friendship was and how blessed a person is if they have a friend like this. You know, if you have a friend like Jonathan, or if you're looking at it from the other perspective, this is just as close as it gets. And it's hard to find friends like that. It's just a beautiful relationship. And so it's a beautiful read, and it's a great application of the type of friend we need to be to people. Where we're at, as far as in the map, we have been dealing with Gibeah quite a bit. That is where Saul has been located. This is where David served in Saul's court. He would play the harp for him to soothe him and make the spirit go away. And then Saul attempted to kill him. So David fled to Ramah. This is where he met with Samuel for refuge. And then from there, we know that Saul himself sent messengers there to Ramah. He himself went there, and the Spirit of God came upon the messengers and him. So then David returned back to Gibeah, and that is where we had the situation where Jonathan communicated secretly by shooting the arrows, shooting an arrow and shooting it over the head of the lad and telling him to go fetch it. And that was a message that David was being sent out by the Lord. From there, we're going to be reading of how in this next chapter, chapter 21, David is going to flee to Nob. It's a city of priests. And the situation that we deal with there is going to be dealing with the bread of the presence. Also, Goliath's sword is mentioned, which is very interesting. And then he's going to go all the way over here to Gath. What's so interesting about that is, where is Gath located? That's right, in Philistia, the land of the Philistines. And so that is very interesting when you realize him going into a foreign land to seek refuge there for a period of time. And the way he has to behave to survive when he's there too. So in 1 Samuel 21, some of the themes we're going to be reading about is David fled to Elimelech and Nob. Also, we're going to read how while David is in Nob, he's going to gather much needed supplies. He's in need of food. He's in need of a weapon. And so both of those things are going to be supplied by him by a priest named Elimelech in Nob. And then also he's going to be traveling, like we just said, to Gath, which is in Philistia. And he's going to be seeking refuge there, and he's going to display some great acting skills to spare his own life. He had to do some really unique things when he was in Gath. So let's look at chapter 21 and these first seven verses. After leaving Jonathan, David fled to Nob to Elimelech the priest. And Nob was a city located between Anathoth and Jerusalem. And Elimelech was the high priest who was a descendant of Eli. That is interesting that Elimelech was a descendant of Eli. Some would say his great-grandson. How did Elimelech react to David arriving at Nob? What was that?
Why are you here?
Yeah. It said that he was trembling when he saw David there. He wondered, like, why are you alone? Why is no one with you? And you can understand why Elimelech was surprised. He didn't see any soldiers with David. He didn't understand why he would be there without any soldiers. What's going on? And David's reply was that he was there doing what? Secret business for the king. That's right. So he tells him that he's there on the king's business. It's secret in nature. And that he had told his young men to go to a specific place. And that's why they weren't with him at that moment. In verse 3, David asked Elimelech for food. He asked for 5 loaves of bread, or he said even anything that could be found, whatever could be found. The type of bread that David is asking for was common bread. What did Elimelech offer David, or what did he say that he had? Showbread. That's right. So he had the showbread. So he offers David the consecrated bread of the presence because there was no ordinary bread on hand. He said that they could have it as long as the men were clean, if they had not been with any women. And so David replied, the men had not been with any women, so it would be appropriate and they could have it. And so Elimelech gives him this bread. This bread would have been consecrated bread of the presence, and it would have been removed at some point with hot bread. They would have changed it out. And so it's interesting here because this is a reference to Matthew chapter 12. That many of us are very familiar with, when Jesus refers to this occurrence of David eating the showbread. It's Matthew chapter 12, and Jesus, if you remember, he's hungry. The disciples with him are hungry. They're walking through this field, and they're plucking grain, and they're eating it. Why did the Pharisees have issue with that? It was on the what? It was on the Sabbath, right? And so that was their claim, is that what right do you have to be doing this on the Sabbath? And so he said, if you look at Matthew chapter 12, verses 3 through 7, Jesus said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he became hungry, he and his companions, how he entered the house of God and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priests alone? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and are innocent? But I say to you that something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, 'I desire compassion and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent." So Jesus plainly stated it was not lawful for David to eat of the bread, since it was for priests alone. But he also said that what Elimelech had done and the judgment that Elimelech used in giving it to David was that he was putting mercy first and putting mercy before judgment in giving him and offering this ceremonial bread to him. Who was, if you look at verse 7, who was one of the servants of Saul that saw all of this happen, who was located there at Nob? Yeah, he acts like a dog. He does. He's a terrible human being in the passages that we will be reading tonight. Doeg is what I'm going to call him tonight. I don't know. You can pronounce it how you would like. But Doeg the Edomite. And he was the chief of Saul's shepherds. And he sees all this happen. And so that's going to be a key player in these next several verses that we read. In verses 8 through 15, after getting some bread to eat, David needs a weapon. He's still there with Elimelech here in Nob, and he had left so quickly that he didn't have any weapons with him. He left them behind. What weapon did Elimelech have? The sword of Goliath was there. He said, "The sword of Goliath is over here. It's behind the ephod." And he said to David, "If you take it for yourself, or if you would take it for yourself, take it. For there is no other except it here." And David replied and said, "There is none like it. Give it to me." Is it true that Goliath's sword, there was nothing like it? This was one of a kind. So you can imagine, I'm sure his eyes probably lit up, you know, when he saw this. And so the only weapon he has is Goliath's sword. So now he has food, he has a weapon, he has Goliath's sword. And where's he going to go? Gath, the land of the Philistines. With what in his hand? The Goliath sword. That is amazing to me. We were in Louisville Saturday, and I was talking to Nate Schaus, and we were talking a little bit about 1 Samuel, and it just, the bell went off. And at first, when you hear think of that, you think, that's crazy. You're going to take the sword of Goliath into the land of the Philistines? And he's killed Goliath. He has killed many, many, many Philistines, and he's going to go into their territory for refuge? It sounds crazy. But it wasn't. And if you read some of the Psalms along the way and how his disposition was during this whole thing, who was he trusting in the whole way? God was going to make it happen. God was his refuge. God was going to deliver him. And I think it shows David's great faith. I really think it does, that he was going to take a weapon like this into a land. And it doesn't mean that he wasn't afraid at times. We're going to read in just a minute. He had some fears and some things he had to do. But overall, he was steadfast that God was going to deliver him, even in the land of the Philistines when he went there. So when David arrives here in Gath of Philistia, do the people recognize him? Yes, they do. There is a connection here. I do want to say this too. If you want to look at Psalm 56 on your own time or Psalm 34, it talks a great deal about David here in Gath before King Achish. But yes, when he gets to Philistia, the people recognize him. And it said that when he arrived in verse 11, they said, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one as they danced, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s?' They even knew of the song that the women sang in the streets." So David took these words to heart, and David greatly feared the king of Gath. He was fearful of the king of Gath. And we can understand why. If he had acted righteously, so righteously with Saul, and Saul was pursuing his life, what do you think a king of the Philistines would want to do to David? No questions asked. Like, David's here? I mean, his life would have been in grave danger. So at this point, David wrote a psalm. He wrote Psalm 56, he wrote Psalm 34, reflecting on these moments. So how did he decide to behave before the king of Gath? He acts crazy. Yeah, he acts like he's insane, like he's like a madman. Two things that are described here is when you look at verse 13, it says, "So he disguised his sanity before them and acted insanely in their hands and scribbled on the doors of the gate and let his saliva run down his beard." He acted like he was out of his mind. And it must have been pretty impressive to the king of the king of Gad. Because when he sees David and he sees what's going on, in verse 14, he replied and said, "Behold, you see the man behaving like a madman. Why do you bring him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this one to act the madman in my presence? Shall this one come into my house?" He's saying, "I've got enough crazy people around me and madmen around me, and I've got another one." So I mean, so it made it where David was not a threat whatsoever, is how they felt. He's lost his mind. Why would we even like deal with him? He's not here to fight anybody. And so David had to do some really interesting things here to make sure that he could be protected. Do we have any statements or comments so far that you would like to add? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, how is it transported, moved, and when? Yeah. It's a good question. Uh-huh. And another thing I was looking up, you know, you have the weights in shekels of so many of the things of Goliath and the spear. It's told what the size was and the weight. I didn't see where it says how large the sword was or what the weight of it. So I'm curious about that. But we know it had been substantial, very substantial. That's right. He could use it. Mm-hmm. Very, very true. All right. So in chapter 22, we find David still on the run for his life. We're going to see that over several chapters, like we said. At this time, he's going to seek refuge for his parents. He realizes, you know, my parents are in danger, and so I need to get them out of the land. Another thing is that we read a little bit more about Saul's accomplice, someone who's working with Saul and does some terrible things. By Saul's command, and that's Doeg the Edomite. And then also we read of Elimelech. Elimelech is summoned by Saul in this chapter. Saul makes some terrible claims and charges before Elimelech that are just unfounded and untrue. Elimelech defends himself righteously, and Doeg and Saul carry out unimaginable wrath on not just Elimelech and his family, but on the priests and on the city of Nob. All right, let's look at verses 1 through 5. In verses 1 through 5, we find that David became a captain of 400 men now. And what happened here is that he arrived at the cave of Adullam, and when he went there, His family heard that he was located in this cave. So his family gathered to him. And not only did his family gather to him, but it also states here that, if you look at verse 2, everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, everyone who was discontented gathered to him. And he became captain over them. Now there were about 400 men with him. So this group is kind of like a ragtag group of a lot of people, 400 people, that gather to David for various reasons. And it's interesting because are these like really true soldiers ready to fight? It doesn't seem that way at all. But will they be effective in fighting? Yes. In chapter 23, in chapter 27, they will be effective. And it's because the Lord is with David that they will be effective in fighting. David's life, though, was still very much in grave danger. So he knew it was not safe for his parents to be in the land. He wanted to find a place of refuge for them. So he decides to take them outside of Israel, and he decides he's going to take them where? The land of Moab. What's significant about the land of Moab to David? Ruth. Ancestors, yes. So you have Jesse's grandmother, Ruth. And so you see there is a little bit of connection there with Moab. Whether that's what he was thinking there, I don't know. But there is a connection there, obviously, of the lineage there. We've studied Ruth and talked about that. Some have said that this trek from where he was located, from this cave, to Moab would have been very difficult, especially if his parents were older, if Jesse and his wife were older. They say that this is possibly about 3,000 feet, and it's a descent from the Dead Sea followed by an ascent back up to Moab. So this could have been a pretty difficult trip through hills and mountains and such through this area. So David went to the king of Moab in verse 3, and he said, "Please let my father and mother come and stay with you until I know what God will do for me." So David was able to leave his parents there in Moab, and David left there. He went to a stronghold. We're told in verse 5 that a prophet named Gad said to David, "Do not stay in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. So David listened to this prophet. He said, "You need to leave." And he goes. He goes back to the land of Judah and leaves his parents in Moab. Here's a map showing this in a little more detail. You can see here's Gath, where he would have been acting like he was a madman in the land of Philistia. And then he traveled over here to this cave. This is where the 400 men gathered to him, and his parents and family gathered to him. And then he takes his parents all the way over here. So you can see this would have been some distance. It looks like, if you look at the marker over here, it doesn't look like a great deal of miles, but remember that he's going through a forest and a great deal of terrain there. And then possibly he would have been here at the stronghold. They call it Masada. And the forest of Hereth was here in this area right here. There's a great map. I don't know if Larry's planning to use it this coming week, but it is a map where it shows overall, over all these chapters, the paths of David trying to escape Saul. And it looks like a person just did this. And it's true. I mean, it's just swirls and squiggles, and it's just all over these lands. City to city, going to foreign lands, doing what he had to do to flee David's threat, or flee Saul's threats. It's impressive. And through it all, the Lord was delivering him. In verses 6 through 10, Saul heard that David and his men had been discovered. So Saul was in Gibeah. He was under a tamarisk tree. Again, we find out he's got a spear in his hand. A lot of times we've read if Saul has a spear in his hand. In verse 7, Saul made a proclamation to those that were around him. They were Benjamites. They were servants around him. And he said, "Hear now, O Benjamites, will the son of Jesse also give to all of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you all commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds? For all of you have conspired against me, so that there is no one who discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. And there is none of you who is sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in ambush as it is this day." How much truth is there in that statement? Not a lot. Yeah. So he's speaking to his own people, the Benjamites, looking for sympathy. And he practically said, "Would David, the son of Jesse, treat you as good as I do?" I gave you fields, I give you vineyards, and I make you commanders. I do all these wonderful things for you. Saul said that all of them had conspired against him. Is that true? No. They refused to disclose Jonathan and David's covenant. Not true. No one was sorry for him. Saul's wanting sympathy from people. And then he said Jonathan had stirred up David. Had Jonathan stirred up David? Not even close. And then David was lying in ambush. Not happening. None of these things are true. So Saul felt so sorry for himself. He desired the pity of the people, the Benjamites. So Saul was willing to do again anything he had to do to get David killed, including deceiving people, lying about it, doing whatever he had to do. So David was not in ambush, and Jonathan most definitely had not stirred him up. At this point, someone is there, though, listening to this statement. And who is it? There is Doeg. Yeah, Doeg the Edomite. And when he hears this, Doeg, I don't know if he raised his hand or spoke up, but he saw Chief Shepherd, and he said that he was in Nob, and he saw David there. And he said that Doeg told Saul that Elimelech inquired of the Lord for David. He said that Elimelech had given David provisions, and Elimelech had given him the sword of Goliath. Elimelech had done all these things. So Psalm 52 is a psalm that was written about David concerning this very instance when Doeg went to Saul and spoke these things about David and Elimelech. And some of the things that are mentioned in this psalm is that it speaks about Doeg and Saul as being men who love evil more than good. Men who love words that devour. Oh, deceitful tongue. David speaks of God again as his refuge. His refuge wasn't the caves. His refuge weren't the cities or the countries he went to. David's refuge was the Lord. And he states that plainly in Psalm 52 in this situation. It's a beautiful parallel. So, what's Saul going to do at this point? Well, after Saul heard what Doeg said, he summoned Elimelech. He calls him. He says, Elimelech, come up. And he says, all of Elimelech's household has to come up. All the priests in Nob, all of them have to come to Saul. And in verses 12 and 13, he speaks to them. And Saul says, listen now, son of Ahitub. And he answered, here I am, my lord. Then Saul said to him, why have you and the son of Jesse conspired against me? In that you have given him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him so that he would rise up against me by lying in ambush as it is this day. He makes these claims again and he makes them directly to Elimelech, the priest. This is something to remember. What did Elimelech think David was doing when he came to Nob? He was on a secret mission from the king. So you can understand when Elimelech hears this, he's like, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't know of any of this, right? Saul had absolutely lost all sense of dignity and righteous reasoning. Elimelech was not in the wrong whatsoever. And so at this point, Elimelech's going to make his reply. And Elimelech responded to the king by defending David. He told Saul plainly that no one was as faithful as David. Who else has told Saul that no one was as faithful as David? Jonathan has said this to him repeatedly. And so he hears it again now from Elimelech. And Elimelech stated he did nothing wrong personally whatsoever. That he had no knowledge whatsoever about this whole affair. And so Elimelech responded very righteously to these accusations by King Saul. Saul's response and actions here again display how just wicked and evil Saul had become. In verse 16, Saul said to Elimelech, he said, you shall surely die, Elimelech. You and all your father's household. So then Saul commands the guards to kill the priests of the Lord because their hand was with David and because they knew that he was fleeing and did not reveal it. So he says, servants, kill him. Will the servants do it? They won't raise their sword. They won't do it. Now, why wouldn't they do that? That's a kind of a silly question, but why? These are the priests of the Lord. They understand the gravity of this situation, and there's no way they're going to strike down a priest of the Lord. I mean, these are priests of the Lord. They're not going to do it. So at this point, in verse 18, we are told that since the servants would not kill the priest, Saul commanded Doeg to do it. Again, Doeg the who? Is Doeg of Israel? No. He's a foreigner. That's interesting, right? These others revered God to a level that they would not strike down the priests. Doeg the Edomite, he doesn't seem to have the regard and respect. That's right. And so this foreigner, Doeg the Edomite, he strikes them down. In verses 18 and 19, we see in 18, then the king said to Doeg, you turn around and attack the priest. And Doeg the Edomite turned around and attacked the priest, and he killed that day 85 men who wore the linen ephod. And he struck Nob, the city of the priest, with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and infants, also oxen, donkeys, and sheep he struck down with the edge of the sword. So Doeg the Edomite carries out this terrible, wicked act, something that the Israelite servants refused to do. And we have said repeatedly that Saul would stop at nothing to kill David. And now that is even causing him to try to kill his son. It's causing him to even go to the level of, I'm about to kill a priest. He'll do whatever he wants to do to carry out his anger. And it's just flooding over and boiling over. But he treats the city of Nob like an enemy city. The city of Nob was not an enemy city. It was a city of priests. And so Saul was ruthless, and Doeg had become in many ways his right-hand man to carry out these wicked plans. I want to pause here for a minute and see if you all have some comments you'd like to add. Yeah, Evan? Great point. That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, you're exactly right. It's senseless. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it shows the Spirit of the Lord is just completely departed, and he's just ruthless as can be. Uh-huh. It's a great comparison, Evan. Only one member of Elimelech's household survived. It was his son, Abathar. And Abathar, when this slaughter occurs, he's able to escape. He goes to his one person he could probably trust, which is David. He's on the run, and he goes to a man on the run, right? And so he goes to David. He tells him what's happened. He tells him that all the priests have been killed. And you can understand, I'm sure there was great grieving here when David heard this news. Because David said in verse 22, he said, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, I have brought about the death of every person in your father's household. Stay with me, do not be afraid. For he who seeks my life seeks your life, for you are safe with me. David realized he felt guilty for having gone to Nob in the first place and going to the priest. Abathar took the words to heart, though. And we know that Abathar would actually become David's priest, I guess you could say, or the priest, I should say, with David. And would this be a long relationship here? This would last all through David's life. Abathar would be there all the way through until David's death. He goes all the way into 2 Samuel 20. Solomon eventually banishes him. So this was a very close relationship between Abathar and David over many years. All right, 1 Samuel 23. In this chapter, David delivers the city of Keilah from the hand of the Philistines. David inquires of the Lord on multiple occasions for help, making sure that he is doing what is the will of God. And also we see David and Jonathan reuniting. In verse 16, Jonathan encouraged David in God, a beautiful statement about his encouragement that he provided for David at such a dire time. Here in the first five verses of chapter 23, David heard that the Philistines were fighting against Keilah. Keilah was in the territory of Judah. And so David inquired of the Lord to ask if he should attack the Philistines. The Lord told David to go and attack the Philistines and to deliver Keilah. How did the men with David respond? We're already afraid. We're already running for our lives. We're going to go take on the Philistines? This doesn't make any sense, right? And so they were already saying, we're already afraid, right? This group of individuals doubted that they could take on the Philistines and be victorious. So David inquired again a second time, asking if they should go. And the Lord answered in verse 4. The Lord answered David and said, arise, go down to Keilah, for I will give the Philistines into your hand. So at that point, David took his men against the Philistines. He defeated them, and he delivered these the men of Keilah, who were being plundered on the threshing floor by the Philistines. Here it is on the map. He would have been here in the forest of Hereth. Previously to this, you can see Keilah is over right here, just a little bit to the west, when he saves Keilah from the Philistines. Continuing on, here in verses 6 through 14, we find that Abiathar brought an ephod with him when he fled to David. And so Saul hears that David is now in Keilah. And so what did Saul think about David coming to Keilah? What? Here is my chance. That's right. He has locked himself into the city. It says he has shut himself in. In verse 7, he has shut himself in by entering a city with double gates and bars. He's going to be trapped. And so he thinks that God has even delivered him into his hand. You can see that's just pretty crazy that Saul would say, God has delivered him into my hand, for he shut him in or shut himself in by entering a city with double gates and bars. This displays how Saul had deceived himself so foolishly to believe that the Lord was working to deliver David into his hand. Saul summoned all the people to go to war and to besiege the city of Keilah, to just capture this one man, to capture David. So David found out about the plot. He told Abiathar the priest to bring the ephod. And then David petitioned the Lord again, and he asked two questions. What are the two questions that David asked? That's right. And what was the answer? Yes. And what was the second question? Will Saul come down? And what was the answer? Yes. So David knew we've got to get out of town, right? And so based on those responses that David received from the Lord, he and his men left. Now, at this time, it states that in verse 13, then David and his men, about 600, arose and departed from Keilah, and they went wherever they could go. So he has gained more men. He had 400, if you think about just a few chapters ago in chapter 20, or last chapter, chapter 22, verse 2. But they're just going anywhere they can go, trying to find safety and find refuge. And so Saul found out that he had escaped, and he momentarily gave up his pursuit. But David remained in the wilderness, yet Saul continued this relentless pursuit on a daily basis. It says there at the end of verse 14, Saul sought him every day. But God did not deliver him into his hand. Every day. But God would not allow it to happen. In verse 15, we read that David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And again, David was aware of Saul's pursuit. At this point, who came and visited David? Jonathan. What an encouragement and what a refreshment this must have been to David at this moment. During this great time of tribulation where he is running for his life from place to place, here is his dearest friend. And in verse 16, we read that Jonathan encouraged David in God. He said, "Do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul, my father, will not find you, and you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you, and Saul, my father, knows that also." Jonathan was convinced and glad to know that David would be king over Israel. It's interesting that with Jonathan's personality and his speech and everything about him, we don't see any ounce of resentment. We don't see any pride. He doesn't see this as the kingdom's being taken away from him and he's the rightful heir. He doesn't think anything like Saul thinks about any of this. He knows this is of God. It's God's will that David would be king. David is anointed. And they again make a covenant before the Lord, and then Jonathan departs to go back home. This must have been very helpful to David. And then in verse 19, it wasn't Doeg this time ratting out David's location, but it was the Ziphites, the people who lived in Ziph. They came to Saul. They told him that David was in the strongholds of Horesh in Ziph. They told Saul to come to Ziph, and they would surrender David over. In Psalm 54, which correlates with this, David prayed. And in the prayer, he proclaimed, "God is my helper. God is my helper." And so Saul responded to the Ziphites and said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, for you have had compassion on me." Again, Saul praised them for taking pity on him. He told them to go and find out for sure exactly where he was located. Because he said David was very cunning. He had heard that David was very cunning, or had been told David was very cunning. That's something Saul knew very well himself. So Saul said at the end of verse 22, I will search him out among all the thousands of Judah. He is just relentless in this pursuit of David. Then in the end of chapter 23, Saul came within moments of capturing David. The men of Ziph had left Saul. They headed back home. David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in Arabah. And again, David was aware of Saul's pursuit. So Saul went on one side of the mountain. David was on the other side of the mountain. And just as Saul's men were surrounding David to seize him, this is within a moment's notice that they're going to be caught. What happened? That's right. A messenger in verse 27 came to Saul and said, hurry up and come, for the Philistines have made a raid on the land. So Saul returned from that pursuing David and went to meet the Philistines. Therefore, they call that place the Rock of Escape. Do you think that was of the Lord? Mm-hmm. I think so, too. So obviously, at this point, David goes up from there. He stays in the strongholds of En-Gedi. I think the main theme we're seeing, just kind of a repeat over and over. Saul is going here. He pursues him. He's not able to get him. David goes somewhere else. We see these things happening. But it just shows the relentless wickedness of Saul. And it shows the righteousness of David in trusting in God as his refuge. You really see those two things played out so well. All right. Thank you all so much. I appreciate it.